again, everyone. This is Mark Mavsesian, and I'm the director of the Center for Law and Religion at St. John's, and I'm joined once again by my friend and my colleague, the center's co-director, Mark DiGirolami, for another episode of Legal Spirits, which is our podcast series on issues and cases in law and religion. You can find past episodes archived on iTunes and also at our website, lawandreligionforum.org. Well, Mark, today we're going to talk about a new case concerning abortion. The case is called Gee, versus June Medical Services, a case coming up from Louisiana. The court recently granted cert in this case, and the case raises some complicated questions, both about the future of the law of abortion in this country and also about the dynamics on the court with respect to that issue. I should say for our listeners, this case involves a Louisiana abortion law that we discussed along with other laws in an earlier podcast back in June, which was one of our most listened to podcasts, Mark. So our audience obviously cares about this issue.
Okay, well, great. So here's what we're going to do in this podcast, because there are a number of moving parts. So we will first give the background of the case in the lower courts. We'll second discuss the petition, and actually there's a petition in this case as well as a cross petition, both of which were granted by the court. Third, we'll speculate about which justices accepted cert on these petitions and why they may have, and perhaps what those decisions suggest about the ultimate outcome.
Right. And I should say that we're not really prepared to weigh in on the merits of this case, at least right now, because as we're going to explain, this is quite a complicated case and very fact-specific. But the case is nonetheless interesting in light of that earlier podcast I mentioned, in which we addressed how the court might evaluate these laws in light of the new membership of the court, and also what the laws suggest about our current cultural moment. Okay, Mark, so why don't you give us the background of the case?
Okay, good. So the state of Louisiana enacted the Unsafe Abortion Protection Act, which requires abortion providers to have or to obtain admitting privileges in a hospital located within 30 miles of the clinic where they perform abortions.
Yeah, among other things. That's one
correct,
section of
the course. That's the provision of the act that's being challenged.
Right. And the trouble is that in 2016, the court decided a case called Whole Woman's Health versus Hellerstedt and struck down a Texas law which, at least to the outsider at first glance, looks awfully similar to the Louisiana law.
That's right. The court in Whole Woman's Health held that a similar and analogous requirement imposed by Texas posed an undue burden on the ability of women to obtain abortions, undue burden being the operative legal language that comes from Planned Parenthood versus Casey.
Right, and Hellerstedt was a 5-3 decision which was issued shortly after Justice Scalia passed away. And so what was the makeup of that decision?
Yeah, so you had a decision there authored by Justice Breyer, joined by Justice Kennedy, as you say, 5-3, holding that because of the number of abortion clinics that would be forced to close on account of the requirement, the number of women living certain distances away from the existing clinics and several other factors, because of all these factual details, the Texas statute imposed an undue burden.
Right, but that was 2016. Of course, the membership of the court has changed now. Justice Kennedy's retired. There's now Justice Gorsuch and Justice Kavanaugh, and so people are wondering whether the ruling will change.
Right, and so that gave rise to the dispositions in this case, in our case, the case up before the court. While the district court in Louisiana struck down a Louisiana statutory requirement as inconsistent with Whole Woman's Health, a panel of the Fifth Circuit disagreed.
Right. And looking at this panel decision, it was written by Judge Jerry Smith, who's thought to be a conservative judge. It was an incredibly fact-specific opinion.
Yeah. So, in fact, the way that the panel, the majority of the panel, got around Whole Woman's Health in what, as you say, looks at least to the untrained observer as a very, very similar sort of statutory provision, was distinguished by the panel on a number of very specific factual grounds. So the court said, look, unlike in Texas, in Louisiana, doctors don't have to admit a certain number of patients per year in order to obtain admitting privileges. You know, the majority said, in fact, no abortion clinics would shut down as a result of the admitting privileges requirement in Louisiana, while in the Texas case, only 8 out of 40 were able to stay open. There were other distinctions drawn by the panel here. The panel said only one doctor at one clinic actually couldn't get admitting privileges. There were lots of doctors that simply didn't try to get admitting privileges or were not in good faith about claiming that they had been denied admitting privileges, but they could if they had wanted to. The court compared the issue of driving distances, said, look, in the Louisiana context, driving distances for women wanting to obtain abortions would not substantially increase since no clinics would be forced to shut down. The justifications for the act advanced in the Louisiana case were found to be compelling, protecting maternal health as well as protecting unborn life, while they were not thought to be compelling on different sorts of evidence in the Texas case. All of that basically combined to get the 2-1 vote in the panel decision upholding the Louisiana law.
Right. So as you describe it, this is an extremely detailed comparison of various interests and factual effects and obstacles that were at play in Texas and then in play in Louisiana or not in play in Louisiana. It's excruciatingly fact-specific. And, you know, for a court watcher, what is really striking about this is just the sort of case that a court might be expected to deny cert on because it is so fact-specific. There's not yet any kind of a circuit split. And yet the court has reached out to take this case, which is a puzzle. We're going to talk about it a little bit later in the podcast, but it is a puzzle that they would reach out and do this.
Yeah, now, look, it is true that in this particular area, the court's own tests have been extremely fact-specific. So if you just look at the way that a case like Planned Parenthood versus Casey goes, once the court stops talking about, you know, sweet mysteries of life and its own legitimacy, the remainder of the decision is extraordinarily fact-specific in examining in detail each of these, the whatever it was, 6-7 provisions of the Pennsylvania law there at issue and sort of evaluating costs versus benefits versus burdens and so on. So the framework itself is highly fact-specific in this context, no matter which court is doing the evaluation.
Right. And look, abortion is a very sensitive topic, and that's another reason why they took it. Now, we should say there was a dissent in the Fifth Circuit by Judge Higginbotham, who took issue with how he argued. Judge Smith's opinion kind of retried the case, involving lots of new factual determinations. Then there was a petition for rehearing, but that was denied. And then we got to the Supreme Court.
Right. And so once we get to the Supreme Court, right, the decision, the panel decision and the denial, which itself generated some the denial for rehearing, I should say, which generated dissents from denial, all of that issues in two petitions for certiorari.
A petition and a cross petition.
A petition and a cross. But just before we talk about those, let's mention one other thing, which is after the case was not reheard, the losing party, which was the clinics, filed a petition to stay the Fifth Circuit order implementing the Louisiana law pending the petition for writ of cert.
Right. Very unusual.
And that petition, which was decided by the Supreme Court back in February of 2019, was granted by the Supreme Court.
That's what's unusual, right? They granted the stay before they'd even decided on the cert petition.
Well, and what's even stranger about it, so you have four justices dissented from the stay, Justice Alito, Justice Thomas, Justice Gorsuch, and Justice Kavanaugh.
The four progressives. Oh, the four conservatives dissenting.
Right? And with Kavanaugh actually writing, explaining the reasons for denying the stay, which means, of course, that Chief Justice Roberts joined the progressive wing of the court to grant the stay.
Right. Those are the four progressives. They voted to grant the stay.
They voted to grant the stay
with Chief Justice
with the
Roberts.
Chief. With the right. Chief. Now, look, what all of that means is anybody's guess. Obviously, the standard for granting a stay is not the same as a merits decision. But I think, you know, it's interesting that the Chief Justice took that step. Just why the Chief Justice joined the progressive wing of the court in granting the stay isn't clear, at least not to me. Mark, you have any thoughts about that?
Well, look, who knows what happens, but we can do a little tea leaf reading here. It's just a podcast, after all. And I wonder whether Chief Justice Roberts wasn't what we call a courtesy fifth to grant the stay. That is, the four progressive justices may have told him that they were going to vote to grant cert when the inevitable petition arrived, and perhaps Roberts joined them to stay enforcement of the law just as a courtesy to them. Now, that does sometimes happen. That does sometimes happen at the court. It usually happens after the cert petition has been granted, not before, and it usually happens in death penalty cases at the time set for execution. But it can happen before a grant of cert as well. And, you know, maybe abortion law is now joining the death penalty cases as just an unusual category for the court in which normal customs are dispensed with. But the short of it is, Mark, no, I don't know why that happened either. That's just some speculation on my part.
Okay. All right. So that is, again, interesting sort of background and, you know, preparing the groundwork for what's coming now in some way. So let's talk about the petitions for cert. The first petition, of course, is by the losing parties in the litigation, the abortion clinics. The argument is the obvious one, that the Fifth Circuit's panel decision cannot be reconciled with a Supreme Court's decision in Whole Woman's Health. So the challengers basically offer very different predictions about what will happen to access to abortion if the law goes into effect. They say in the petition that, quote, the Louisiana Act would shutter every abortion clinic in Louisiana but one, a close quote. They also say that the state's claimed interests, health interests, are a sham, that there is no health-related reason to require admitting privileges at all. In fact, this is an argument that was also made by the majority opinion authored by Justice Breyer in Whole Woman's Health. But the object here is to try to make the case as close factually to Whole Woman's Health as possible and to argue, you know, the panel circumvented this, the Whole Woman's Health, in bad faith.
Yeah, their argument is, look, this Louisiana law is just the same as the Texas law, and this is just an example of the renegade Court of Appeals being unwilling to follow the Supreme Court precedent. In fact, I think, Mark, the cert petition at first argued for a summary reversal of the Fifth Circuit.
I think that you're right about that, yeah. But look, whether we're dealing, as we said, with very, very fact-specific questions with predictions about what will happen on the basis of closures and evidence presented by both parties, whether you think the distinctions between the Whole Woman's Health case and this one are spurious or significant is going to ultimately, I fear, depend on your view of the merits of the abortion question as a matter of constitutional law more generally.
Okay. Now, there's also a cross petition in the case.
Right. There's a so-called
Which
was also granted. A conditional cross petition, conditional on the granting of the main petition, filed by the state and also accepted by the court. And the cross petition says, look, abortion providers cannot assert claims on behalf of women seeking abortions,
yeah,
which is
really,
just what they're doing here.
Really a fascinating, we're going to talk about why. I think this is a really fascinating issue and a real signal of what might be going on here.
Right. So this is a justiciability question. This is an issue of standing. The claim is, on the part of the state, because it's abortion providers rather than women seeking abortions who are the parties, the question of standing or the concreteness and particularity of the injury that they are claiming, that the abortion clinics and abortion providers are claiming, those are going to be important here. The key here is that the abortion providers are not going to get, cannot get the undue burden standard of review if they are claiming that it is they themselves that have been injured by the Louisiana law.
Now, of course, what they're saying is that they are standing in for the patients.
That's true. But let's just, assuming that they were bringing their own claims on their own behalf, the standard of review, the standard of scrutiny would be rational basis.
Correct.
Which they almost certainly, if rational basis is applied as it usually is, they would lose. So instead, just exactly as you say, the abortion providers have to say, no, we're asserting injuries on behalf of the women for whom we are performing abortion.
Which normally would be kind of strange, but in the abortion context, the Supreme Court has allowed that to happen.
That's true. There's a case that has allowed this kind of standing and has allowed abortion providers to obtain the more rigorous undue burden standard of review for, in this case, the Louisiana law. So that sort of standing, as you say, generally we don't allow it. An exception has sometimes been made by the court in the abortion context, assuming the abortion restriction in question affects, quote unquote, a large number of women.
Right, that's the predicate. So these clinics would be able to bring this case standing in for the patients if the law in question affects, quote, a large fraction of women in the jurisdiction.
That's right. So the cross petition says, Supreme Court, you should revisit this special exception that you have made for third-party standing by abortion providers on behalf of women seeking abortion. The cross petition says the interests of the abortion providers are actually adverse to those of the women seeking abortions since the provider's interest is to continue to stay in business with substandard medical safeguards, while the women's interest is exactly in the safety of their medical treatment and their abortions.
Very good. So we have the petition saying that this law is unconstitutional under Hellerstedt. We have the cross petition saying actually these clinics can't even bring this case because of the standing issues. And so that's kind of where we are now. Both petitions have been granted.
Yeah, and I should mention something else. There's a very interesting amicus brief filed by Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri, who actually at one time clerked for Chief Justice Roberts.
Not coincidental.
I wouldn't think either, making a very powerful argument for revisiting the standing rules here, for saying, look, there shouldn't be an exception, number one. Even if there is an exception, this Louisiana law does not affect a quote-unquote large fraction of the women in the state who might be seeking abortion. So
okay.
That's something to watch.
Okay, Mark, so let's talk now about what the grant of these petitions suggests about where the court might be going on these issues. What was happening in this?
Okay, case? Well, so as you know, Mark, it only takes four justices to grant a petition. So it's not like, for example, the decision on the stay matter, which takes a majority of the court, or the decision on the merits, obviously. So the calculus is a little bit different in sort of thinking through who exactly it was that agreed to take some of these cases.
Well, let's talk about just the main petition first.
Okay, so I think we can probably say, and here I'm really cribbing off of a very smart piece about this case by Professor Kevin Walsh, who wrote about this at First Things magazine. But he says the petition itself filed by the abortion clinics, almost certainly that was granted by the liberal wing of the court. Ginsburg, Justices Ginsburg, Sotomayor, Breyer, and Kagan. That would be enough on its own to get the petition granted. And I think we can probably also safely say that the cross petition by the state challenging third party standing was granted by the four justices who dissented from the stay. That is Alito, Justices Alito, Gorsuch, Thomas, and Kavanaugh. Okay, so that's number one with respect to just a sort of basic predictions. Okay, now, obviously, Mark, that leaves
Chief Justice Roberts.
That's right. So remember, he voted to grant the stay. Why would he do that if he was thinking of affirming the Fifth Circuit panel decision below?
Right. So I already gave you one theory, which is this was a courtesy fifth, and he was doing this just to be nice to his colleagues who were certainly going to grant the petition. We've talked about that. I don't know. I don't know enough about Chief Justice Roberts' views in these matters, but you might think, well, one possibility is that he thinks that stare decisis requires that the Hellerstedt case be upheld, even though he himself personally dissented in that case. And he might think that the Fifth Circuit has deliberately misread that case. And so, you know, he might think as a matter of judicial economy that Hellerstedt must be adhered to, even if he thought that decision were wrong initially. I that's unusual, but it's a very recent decision. Maybe he thinks, look, you've got to do what we tell you, at least for a while. I know you don't think that's a very plausible explanation, Mark.
Well, look, you are just as capable of predicting his behavior as I am, but it would seem very strange to think that he would now join the progressive. Let's set aside the granting of the stay. Mm-hmm. To actually join the progressive wing of the court striking this regulation down.
If he does it.
Well, so let's put it to you this way. I think that his options on the main petition are really three options. Number one, overrule Whole Woman's Health, thus at least possibly damaging what he thinks of as something very important, which is to say the institutional legitimacy of the court. Whole Woman's Health was decided 3 years ago. It's not so good, at least from his point of view, to have the court be seen as an institution that is overruling itself with respect to very recent decisions. That's one possibility.
Correct.
Second possibility, he could affirm Whole Woman's Health and reverse the panel decision as inconsistent with it. This is what you're suggesting.
Correct.
Now, look, if he does that, it seems to me that he's going to, at least in some circles, damage his own credibility with respect to his own substantive position on this very requirement in a case that seems like it's an easier case than Whole Woman's Health was.
Right.
At least so says the panel decision.
Right.
So that's possibility number two. Possibility number three, he can affirm whole woman's health, but distinguish the facts in the Louisiana case, and that would mean following the lead of the majority Fifth Circuit panel.
Okay, so I agree with you, Mark. This does leave Chief Justice Roberts in a bit of a bind, which is why I think this cross-petition could be a stroke of genius, actually, because it gives him potentially a way out.
So maybe, some kind of a way out. So the standing issue was actually raised by Justice Thomas in his dissent in Whole Woman's Health, a dissent, by the way, that only he signed, and an issue that only he raised in Whole Woman's Health. The other dissent was authored by Justice Alito. It was joined by Justice Thomas and the Chief Justice, and it did not discuss standing. But now there are at least four justices interested in exploring the standing question. Now, parenthetically, I should add, you know, in another podcast that we did about the Bladensburg Cross case, you might remember that we discussed Justice Gorsuch's concurrence as precisely as emphasizing standing questions, that perhaps people who are driving by the cross on a highway simply don't have sufficient injury, concrete injury, to obtain standing.
Well, so Justice Gorsuch might be interested in standing here, too.
So he might, this might be something that appeals to him. I suspect that it does.
Right.
So now you've got four justices interested in the question. Two justices were not on the court when Whole Woman's Health was decided. That's Kavanaugh and Gorsuch. They are likely to be at least two more votes in favor of the cross petition.
Right. And so why did I say this might be a stroke of genius? I mean, just tactically. I mean, strategically. Because the standing issue could be a mechanism for cutting back on the constitutional right to abortion without actually overruling Roe or Casey, right? Because they might say, well, look, we're not going to get into the substance, but we just cannot have clinics bringing cases on behalf of patients because not enough women are affected or because there are just basic constitutional problems. If you think that the court is looking for a way to chip away at Roe and Casey without actually overruling those decisions, especially in an election year, the standing issue could provide a very good vehicle for them to use.
Right. And look, set aside Roe and Casey, if they go in that direction, I don't even think that they have to overrule Whole Woman's Health.
Correct.
Whole Woman's Health can stay in place as the law. The odd thing about it, of course, is that in Whole Woman's Health, it was precisely the clinics bringing the claim. So at least that part of Whole Woman's Health would be abrogated in some way, right? I mean, so it would be a blow to, it would be a major blow, it seems to me, to the abortion regime as it has been created. But you're quite right. It wouldn't have, there wouldn't be the sort of rhetorical sky is falling kind of power that a decision directly overruling Whole Woman's Health, let alone Casey, might generate.
Right. And this is why I think it's very significant that Senator Hawley filed a brief saying this, because he worked for Chief Justice Roberts. He knows how Chief Justice Roberts thinks. He's a senator, apparently has some eye on politics. And this, so look, who knows if this is the case or not, but it strikes me that this could be a good way. If the court is interested in chipping back at the right to an abortion, this could be a way to do it without actually overruling the substance of those opinions.
Even though I think close court watchers and close students of the law, of the constitutional law of abortion, will recognize it for what it is, which is a pretty significant chip. It's not, that's not a small chip that the court would be making if it decides to go the standing route.
Sure, and you know, I'm sure that's the case, and people will feel very strongly about this. But I'm just saying, if you're thinking about it in terms of strategy, if the court wants to do it, this could be a way to do it without having to overrule those cases.
No, I agree with that. I agree with that.
We'll just leave that out for the listeners. Okay, folks. Well, that's all for now. We'll certainly talk about this case more. But for now, this is Mark Movsesian with Mark DeGirolami of the Center for Law and Religion. This has been another episode of Legal Spirits, our podcast series on law and religion. You can find past episodes archived at iTunes and also at our website, lawandreligionforum.org. See you next time.